Hi friends, welcome to another episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host Chantel, and tonight I have the uber one and only special Sophie, because we're coming at you with part two tonight. And I hope, I told you guys last episode that I am mega obsessed with Sophie, and now I think you guys kind of are too, because she's just amazing. She really is. So we've officially reached Turkey Month, which puts Halloween behind us. I've been crying. It's okay. Don't feel bad for me. But it is that time to eat our body weight in pretty much anything, because this is the time of year when it is perfectly respectable to do so. Tonight, we're serving up wide-eyed stares with a big old side of feverish note-taking, because class is in session once again. What in the bell are we talking about? You guys, obviously, it's part two. I just said that. Well, you know, who can get enough of just listening to Sophie? I know I can't. Before we dive into all that deliciousness, what's better than a gold star on the chalkboard? Why, five stars, of course. Post your rating and review for your favorite shows anywhere you listen to your podcasts, and make sure your faves get seen and know how much you love them. Do you have a real life ghost story you'd like to share with the class? Email your story to themediamatters@gmail.com or send it via DM on one of the show's social media pages, and I will personally reply to you to make arrangements for you to tell your story right here on the show. Are you more of a talker, not so much a writer? That's cool. Call us and tell us all about it at 850-203-0118. This season, I'm super grateful for all of you and the time we get to spend together LOLing on the Insta Twitter sphere. If you love the lols as much as I do, come hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, and on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, where we can chill and chat and emoji all the live long day. And while you're scrolling around, make sure you post a screenshot of you listening to any Media Matters episode on your favorite podcast app. Tag me in your Insta Twitter Snapbook post, and I will shout you out like a boss. And don't forget to turn on your notifications and be the first to see new posts from me and the show. And trust me, you're going to want to see what's coming. Keep your eyes peeled. Want more ways to rid yourself of the FOMO? Email me at themediamatters@gmail.com. Reach out on the show's site at themediamatters.com. Call us at 850-203-0118, or take me shopping with you as you pick out your smudge kit, incense, books, new Christmas kicks, whatever your heart desires, right at the show's store. That's right, you guys. Amazon.com/shop/Media Matters, and you can shop with me, because I love shopping on Amazon. It's all I do. I swear to God, it's all I do. Want exclusive goodies like bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes chats, pinky promises, and more? Join our super kick-ass, super exclusive family on Patreon and get immediate access to the fun. Check out the show at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today and forever. Without further ado, let's get down with this week's Can't Resist Crystal, which is the one and only Amazonite. From Cassandra Eason's The Complete Crystal Handbook, Amazonite is great to use on the throat and heart chakras. This blue-green or turquoise beauty is said to help with a myriad of things, including breast problems, recovery after illness, self-respect, especially in women, and so much more. Called the Stone of Courage, Amazonite is named after the semi-mythical 10th century BC Amazon women warriors, because it was said to adorn their shields. Just like Wonder Woman, you guys. Just like Wonder Woman. For more on Amazonite, make sure to check out Cassandra Eason's book, The Complete Crystal Handbook, which I'll make sure I link in the show notes for you. You can also find information on Amazonite using any resource that resonates with you. It's a magical little stone, and I promise you, you're going to want to know this one. It's time to put your mask on first and help the ones you love second. Trust me, guys. This is part two. The rest of it is all going to come together. I promise. Grab your snack, bundle up in your favorite chair, and keep the tissues close by. Remember last time, part one, when I told you and you thanked me? Mm-hmm. Same, some of that. That's right, you guys. Here we go. Okay, so your mom has the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And post-surgery, the doctor is so really... probably patting himself on the back saying, dang,
optimistic.
That is, you know, that was a kick ass surgery right there, and couldn't have gone better.
Yeah.
By, you know, textbook standards, mm-hmm. if you will. So what comes next?
So, that evening, you know, he didn't want us physically there, but that evening I just continued on to protection. I didn't try to do any healing on her body. Her body just went through a lot. And when I say body, there's four bodies. You know, there's her physical, her intellectual, her emotional, and her spiritual. They're all in this game together. So all I do is I continue to protect her room. I can do that remotely. Her room stays protected. And I just fill the room with unconditional love. Because right now, after the surgery, now it's for her to decide what she wants to do, regardless of how any of us in the family feel. And I wanted her to feel that freedom, to know that we support her no matter what. So that's all that was on that particular night. And he was really optimistic. And then the very next day, she was having body responses. She wasn't opening her eyes yet, but that was normal. She just had brain surgery. And she was doing really good on her neurological tests. But, you know, at the same time, I felt like I needed to be really delicate with her. I was there every day in physical form every day, and I would come and I would hold her hand, and I felt I would scan her body. You know, I was like, well, she's kind of not feeling anything right now. And so I would go look for her in an unseen realm to figure out where she's at. Where are you at right now? You know, where are you floating around? And
this is how many days in?
This is the day after surgery.
Okay.
And so she entered the ER on Friday. She had surgery on a Monday. So now I'm on a Tuesday.
Okay.
And I decide to drop in. And I want to know where she is, you know, one of the unseen areas. And I found her watching her review. So if you don't know what a review is, a review is basically you sit down and you watch a film strip of your current lifetime from the very beginning to the very moment that you're in right now. It's kind of a private moment. And it's kind of like me sneaking into a movie theater behind mom. And I'm very, very quiet about it. And I'm sure she knows my presence is there. But I look up and she's looking at this screen and she's watching her view. And I see her when she's born. I see my grandmother. I see mom when she's a toddler. Now, keep in mind, my mom did not talk much about her history in Vietnam because it is very painful. So there were a lot of things I didn't know from her. But as I'm watching review, I see when her mother passes. I see them running from their lives, from the communists, leaving China, going into Vietnam. I see her and grandpa, you know, trying to hide a chicken in her clothes so they can eat. And it just, you know, it progresses on. And then I see a lot of tragedies, but I also see some of her happiest moments, you know. And I didn't stay in a theater the entire time. You have to remember, she's reviewing her entire lifetime. This is hours, you know, in our terms, mm-hmm. hours, you know, over there, time really doesn't matter. So in the morning, I kind of peeked in. I was like, okay, I know what she's doing. She's doing a review. So I stepped out, just let her do a review because this is a private moment. This is part of her decision-making process. You know, I leave for a little bit. I come back and sit down with her, hold her hand. I was like, okay, where are you now? Because I'm checking on her. I was like, she's still doing her review. Okay. Well, I'm just going to hold her hand. I'm going to step out etherically. I'm just going to hold her hand. I'm just going to go to sleep. You know, I'm just going to be a human right now. Just go to sleep. And then later that evening, she's gotten to the part of her review where she's now in the hospital. And she's seeing me there. And she's seeing my brother there. And she's deciding. I could feel her deciding. And, you know, at this point, she's kind of not really acknowledging us. And I don't think she's doing it on purpose necessarily. I think this is just mom time now. You know, I've seen my review. I know where I'm at right now. My kids are in here with my body. My body's in this state. What am I going to do? And, you know, I'm taking a break from that and, you know, walking away and just trying to go home, try to sleep. Because each day I'm there in the morning. I'm there every morning to check on her, to make sure she's still okay. I'm there to clean the room. You know, even though I'm doing it remotely, I make sure my booty's in there to do it physically too.
Right.
And also filling the room again with unconditional love, because I have never seen such amazing care come from hospital staff in my entire life that my mom got. I mean, they did just phenomenal for her. That she was wanting for nothing. Even us, we were wanting for nothing. They were there for us. So it was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. So I'm sure by this point you are whatever is bigger than exhausted.
Oh yeah.
You are working physically, you know, there by her side. You're working remotely when you're not with her. And you are trying to recharge whenever you can. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh. So we get to this point. She does the life review, mm-hmm. and you give her that time to do that. And what are you thinking right now? What are you in? What space are you? Are you trying to decide what you can do energetically for her? Are you just taking a step back and saying, I need to wait on her to tell me when to move next? Or
I'm stepping back, you know, because I know this is a life death situation considering her age, and something that's incredibly important to me anytime energy work is done is respecting boundaries. And sometimes you just have to stay out of the way. So my entire existence was pretty much a supporting goal, just checking where she's at. Because if I felt like she was getting herself into trouble or kind of going in a place that she shouldn't be in, yes, I was going to act. Absolutely. But otherwise, things like doing her review, making decisions, looking back on her life, deciding what she does and doesn't want to do, that's really kind of none of my business.
Right.
It's more or less just respect her and know that she's going to pick what's best for her.
So she does the review, and then what comes after that?
You know, that's another day. So I went to bed, and then the next day was, let's see here. So Monday was the surgery. Tuesday was the review. Wednesday, I came back in the morning and I went to go look for her in the same place for a review, wondering if she's there. She's not there. I'm like, Mom, where are you? I go into some of the more warm and fuzzy realms, I like to call, you know, saying, okay, maybe she's over here. She's not there either. And I start to panic a little bit because the only realm I didn't look in was the second realm, the second physical realm. I hate that place. I don't want to be there. That is where people get stuck. They get stuck in their routine. They get, they don't evolve on a soul level.
And what you're talking about is with them getting stuck is when we we hear those ghost stories, if you will, of, oh, there's this cemetery and every day we see the caretaker come through with the wheelbarrow and mm-hmm. he does it every day. And he just, so that's what you mean.
That's
like
his routine.
In this cycle where they keep doing the same thing over and over because they don't know.
Right. They're stuck in a cycle. They keep doing it over and over and they haven't figured out how to escape that realm. And it's not a good place to be because no one wants to stay stuck in one place. I would like to hope,
right.
You know, you want to move on. You want to evolve. You want to do something other than, hey, I'm going to wake up, eat breakfast, go pick up the trash, watch TV,
right.
And then go back to sleep. Right. So, I did, I stepped into the second physical and, how I do that. I step into the second physical and then I ask someone on the other realm, I said, where's Mom? And immediately I'm taken to her house. She's at her house. And when I had gotten to her hospital bed, I usually show up right about the time that she normally, just before she starts her normal routine of waking up. And sure enough, she's in her house. I'm watching in her house, but I'm not in a space where she can see me. She's just waking up. She's, you know, getting up and putting her shoes on and she's going in the kitchen. She's making, you know, something to drink, a little something to eat. She's feeding E.T., her 30-something-year-old cockatiel, talking to him, telling him good morning. She walks into the bathroom, cleans up. She goes out and watches a little TV, Dr. Oz. And then she, you know, finishes up getting dressed. And I'm like, she's not staying here. I'm interfering. I don't care what kind of karmic debt I'm about to abound, but she's not staying here. But you have to be delicate in the second physical. You can't just show up and say, hey, we're out of here, because they are in their routine. You don't want to do anything to shock them, because then they're going to resist you. And resistance is the hardest thing to deal with on that side. So I was like, okay, she's getting her keys. She's getting ready to go out the door. So I decided to show up by driving my white truck into her driveway just as she's starting to lock her door. And she looks back and she's, you know, she kind of squints her face a little bit like, what are you doing here? And she walks over. I roll my window down. And she walks over. She goes, you know, work today? And I said, no. You know what? I kind of wanted to hang out with you today. Is that okay? She goes, well, I'm going to the shop. I said, well, why don't I give you a ride? Hop on in. Okay. She gets in my truck. My truck is actually my, pretty much my protective bubble. Once she's in my protective bubble, we back out of her driveway. We start driving out of the neighborhood as if she is on the street. And next thing you know, it's nothing but a white light trail. And I've got her out of there. She's out of there. And she's out now back in my, you know, the protective bubble that we've created for her. She's floating. She's happy again. She's out of that second physical world. I'm exhausted. Second physical always exhausts me. There's stuff going on in there that just takes extra effort. And then I go back to sleep in her. I just go back to sleep.
Does she know at all where she was? Can you tell if any of her bodies are...
I don't think she would have known where she was. And that was more her emotional routine kind of body. Because even her body was doing the little movements of, I'm getting a drink.
Her physical body.
Yeah, her physical body. I'm walking. I'm eating because, you know, chewing type of thing. I'm watching something. Her head's moving a little bit. So, yeah. So her physical body is participating a little bit because that is that muscle memory. This is what she's done for decades.
Right.
So it doesn't just go away in one shot.
Wow. So you pull her out of the second realm.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know the second realm is, it's like a, maybe like a mirror of the first. I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of is, but you have to think that time doesn't matter there.
Right.
It's almost like on a repeat. You know, you've got this person on a repeat and it doesn't matter. They can be someone that's lived in the 1730s or someone that's living in the 2019s, but they're on repeat.
Right.
And they don't know it and it doesn't bother them at all.
It looks just like our plane, except just in a loop.
Yeah.
And they just keep...
Yeah, they keep going. They keep searching for that one thing that has them stuck there. So it's not healthy from a etheric standpoint. But then they're not hurting either.
Right.
You know, so it depends on how you want to look at it. And sometimes it's just as one of my teachers would say, well, maybe it's a karmic debt. And I don't know that I believe that it's a karmic debt. Sometimes I think it's more along the lines that they didn't have anybody help them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got stuck here and no one let them out.
Do you ever go into the second realm, see any of these energies and offer help? Are you allowed to do that?
I don't want to be honest. That's not my job.
Right.
You know, they ended up there for some reason. And that reason is really none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go into the second realm unless there's a reason for me to do it. In this case, it was for Mom.
Right.
Have I seen the second realm before? Well, yeah, that's how you get readings. You know, the client across from me, well, I need to talk to so-and-so. 9 times out of 10, that so-and-so is in the second realm, living with that same personality, living that kind of a loop, still holding a bunch of love. Are still holding a bunch of hostilities, still having expectations that are very human in form. And that's why I don't like doing readings, because a lot of readings come from communicating with someone who's stuck in the second realm.
Right.
And the second realm is also where a lot of your earthbounds are. It's where a lot of your suicides hang out. Maybe this may sound weird, but it's not my job to help every single being that comes across, because it's not my business to do that.
Agreed. I agree.
Everybody has their own path. Even if you don't have a physical body, your spiritual self has a path that you have to learn from. And if you start interfering with just random people, you're actually robbing them from their own evolution. And that's not cool.
I agree with that. That makes total sense. So for the I have so many questions. All right, we're gonna go back. We're gonna go back and get back on track because I could talk to you forever. So we are now at the point where you have taken your mom out of the second realm. Mm-hmm. She's no longer in the loop. She's back in the protective space, and mm-hmm. she is happy. And where do we go from there?
So I hope she's happy. I'm exhausted. I pass out. So I'm sleeping next to her. I'm done for the day. You know, at some point it's getting nighttime. I get up, you know, I've been staying with her anywhere from 8 to 10 o'clock at night, and I go home, and the neurologist usually causes me anywhere between 12 a.m. and 3 a.m. or 12 p.m. and 3 a.m. for an update. And then I'm back early the next morning to sit by her side. So now we're on Thursday, and Thursday I find her and she's in a good place. And she's not doing a review. She's not doing routine. She's just on a beach that I recognize as a Vietnam scene. There's a setting sun that's not moving. You know, there's water there. And to me, that symbolizes she's kind of going through her thoughts and her emotions and her decisions. And I saw her Thursday 8 in the morning like that. And I always stay my distance with mom because I didn't want in any way to interfere with her thought process and her decisions, you know, because I'm her child. And I know, I'm pretty sure if I had said something, mom, please come back, please come back, please come back. And she knows I'm thinking that. But to say that while I'm in the etheric realm with her, I think would have been very selfish of me. All I told her was, you are free to choose whatever you want, regardless of what anyone thinks. So please, please make the decision for you this time. So in this space, you know, she's looking out and she's really quiet. She's gorgeous. She's at an age before she had me. You know, and I'm just staring at her in awe. I'm absolutely in love with her. And I just want to run and,
she's playing music if it matters. Back to, just turn it on.
But, you know, I just want to run and say, mommy, I want to hold you. And I knew I couldn't. You know, I just stayed a distance away from her. And at some point, she turned around, she looked at me, and she goes, I think I stay here for a while. And I nodded, and I said, I understand. And I left her to her peace at that point, and again, just went back to sleep right next to her by the hospital bed. I, you know, took a break again, went home, took a nap, and then later that evening, I came back, and she was still in the same space, except she was sitting down. And that, of course, I still kept my distance. And I admit that all this time during the crisis, when it first started, through her surgery up until this point, no one had come for her. I had not seen all the people that I called to protect her were my people. I didn't see any ancestors come for her. I didn't see her husband come, probably for valid reasons. Nobody. And I'm like, who would not come for my mama?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who wouldn't come here and hold her hand? You know,
don't come for her, but come for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
You know, and because when my dad was dying, his relatives all filtered in around him, and she wasn't getting any of that. So I was like, does this mean she might stay? But when I came back Thursday evening to again check on her, she was sitting on the same shore, and then she stood up and she turned around and she was looking back into through the coconut trees and the woods in the back. And I see my grandfather emerge from there, walk from there, and they embrace and they're talking. I can't hear what they're saying, and it wouldn't have mattered because I don't speak Vietnamese. But regardless,
you're talking in code.
Yeah. Regardless, I keep my distance anyway, because this is very much a very intimate moment for my mom, a very private moment for my mom. You know, they speak, they embrace. I know there's nothing but love there. And not long after that, I see my grandmother, her mother, who had died when she was just a toddler, emerge. And that was incredibly emotional between the two of them. They were embracing because mom grew up without a mom. that, you know, and I, my heart is just full of love right now. I was like, she finally gets to see her parents again, because she had to leave grandpa to escape, you know, and that was very difficult for her to do. And then the last being that came out was Minnow, which was her German Shepherd. And also I was alive by then. He was my guard dog. When I was a little baby, he would guard my crib. He came bounding out and she's just rubbing him and they're just loving each other all over. But I know she's in a safe space. They're having their moment. I didn't stay. I backed out and I just went again back to sleep with mom. With the feeling of, I'm glad she's safe. This wonderful, wonderful joy she's feeling right now. But at the same time, I know, I was like, mom's going to leave us. She's going to leave us. They're there to help her work through her emotions and decide, but I'm pretty sure she's going to leave us. You know? And that was hard to swallow. That was very hard to swallow. Still is.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm crying.
I will say that, so that was Thursday evening, and about her neurologist called again midnight that night, and that's when he told me that her outlook actually did not, he wasn't optimistic at all. He had been optimistic up until the Thursday night call. So that was kind of my physical confirmation that she had made a decision. And her CAT scan for her brain was going to be scheduled for Friday, where we would get, again, more physical confirmation of, you know, what was going to happen. Not easy.
Gosh, I'm sorry, guys. I told you in advance there would be some tears. It's hard. It's really huge to say, you know, do what you need to do, and I will be here for you regardless. But, you know, in your heart, in your soul, you are praying so hard that this person's choice is going to be to stay, because who wants to leave you? You're so magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the end, you know, it is about them and what they want to do. And, you know, I felt like that, you know, very much with my grandma when she was in the hospital, and I, you know, said something similar to her, and in my heart I was like, don't go. But, you know, to her, just a quiet moment between the two of us, I was like, do what you got to do. I will love you forever, no matter where you are. And, yeah. You know, we know how that turned out. But
yeah. So I have to say that Friday was really hard on me, because I knew mom's answer. And I also knew that when the spirits or the bodies are trying to detach from each other, that can be a painful and difficult process. And as much as I didn't want to do it, I knew this would help her. So the first thing I did Friday morning was I came in with her, knowing what her decision was, and I told her, if you allow me to, I will help you disconnect from your body. And that's what I did. I cut all the etheric cords, every single one that I could think of to cut, to help her body let go of her. And that sucked. It completely sucked. But at the same time, every time I cut, I could feel the pain going away from her. Because now she's getting detached from the shell that is in a lot of pain. It's going away. Part of her is still in there, absolutely. And she's still in the room with us, and she's still floating around. But, you know, it was the best gift I could possibly give her. And that was Friday morning. I took a break when my brother came, and they were going to take her to get the CAT scan anyway. That always takes a little while. And then I came back Friday afternoon to sit with her, knowing that time was up, getting pretty close. And my sister-in-law came in, sat with me after I'd been there a little bit, and she wasn't familiar with her family history, so I started talking. I talked about, you know, mom's little bit of history in Vietnam. I talked about grandpa, and a tear started, you know, mom was crying. She can hear us. The hearing's the last thing to go. No matter what, you know, she was the last thing to go. She's tearing up, and I realized I picked a painful subject. I was like, I'm so sorry, mom. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I started crying. And I could hear her saying, it's okay. It's okay. But, you know, her physical body starts to stroke, and now she's having massive strokes, which is part of the disconnection process. My sister-in-law is frantically calling my brother. You need to get here. You know, I text my husband, you need to get here. And mom waited. She waited until everybody got there before she completely, her ethereal self completely disconnected from her physical body. And, you know, that was her choice. You know, believe it or not, people do have choices when it comes to something like this. And she waited because it was her time. Regardless of the fact that the bleeding happened from a fall, quote, it was her time. It happened for a reason. And it sucked. Absolutely sucked.
It does suck.
But at the same time, her pain, she wasn't in pain anymore. And, you know, she had looked at her options, the hard road to recovery. She's like, I'm 78 years old. Do you think I had shoulder surgery earlier this year. Physical therapy is terrible. Mm-hmm. That sucks. She said, do you know how much that hurt? And my brain hurts? Oh, this is not happening.
Mm-hmm. I'm done. Keep this shell.
You know, I was like, warranty's up. I'm out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was, you know, and even the CAT scan that the doctor did, her brain looked like it had fully recovered, but the dark stroke after it expanded back to his normal size, he said it was like a beautiful brain. He said, except for the fact that she was having dark strokes. And that is what finally took her. So if anything, at least it was a little less painful. I don't know. So mom is now detached from her body. And at first I thought, hey, my work's done. I'm just going to talk to mom on the other room. But I figure out, that's not necessarily the case.
It never just ends there.
No, it didn't. And this was a new lesson for me, actually. I've learned a lot of lessons this year through death and things that I didn't want to experience. But there is more work that has to be done when even the shell of the body is there. And with mom being an organ donor, by the way, on TV, when you die and they do the organ donation, it doesn't happen in 24 hours in one episode. It happens over the course of several days. So they're put on life support to keep the organs alive. And with that, all their etheric doors are open on that body. And there's still things, unseen things running around the body. So now this is where we get to the part where I call on the demons to protect her body. The angelic or light beings or however term you want to use. Mom's good. She's hanging with them. She's good. She's in the light. She's, you know, in the pathway. She's coming back and forth, visiting my brother and I, trying to comfort us now. I'm keeping her, you know, I don't want her to have to worry about her physical body. And we're trying to get to a point where medical science says she's clinically dead enough. But in that process, I don't want something walking into her body delaying that process.
Right.
So that's why where the demon work comes in. And I called them in and I was like, you just devour, slay, do whatever the heck you want. Keep her away. Keep it away. This is a shell and it stays empty. Just keep it that way. And that takes energy too, because I have to do that every day. And I fill the room with light. But at the same time, I've got them watching her now.
And are the demons, are they affected by the light in any way, or they work together?
They work together
in a harmonious.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they work together. You know, a lot of people think demon, dark, you know, this, that, and the other. It's a harmonious. It's a level of vibration that happens. You know, it's just that, you know, you don't want Fluffy greeting you at the door if you want a guard dog. You know, you want a full on.
You want the big guns,
mastiff.
Yeah. You want the
with
muscle.
All the teeth. Right, you know, right there, if you want something to defend. Right. And that's what they are. They are the ones with all the teeth, so that anything walking by her room is like, you know what? I think I'm just going to go down the hall.
Just kidding. I'm going the other way.
Yeah, just kidding. I don't even know you're here.
Right. Because you did say earlier, you know, a hospital is just one of those environments that does have a lot of things walking around without a physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And they are likely looking for another vessel to occupy.
Yes.
And if they were able to do that, and someone is in a state like that where they are clinically dead, so to speak, but the body has not completely shut down, what could you see happen
so,
if there's a walk-in?
There was, when I was a little girl, my mom would tell me, traditionally, when someone dies in the family, the family members rotate to guard the body, the dead body. And I thought that was so weird because I was thinking, who wants a dead body? I mean, I mean, gross, right? And I didn't quite understand what she was saying because, you know, it's her, she's still learning English. I only know English. And so she said, no, it's to keep the body safe. No one's going to steal the body, but to just not let other things enter the body. And what I realize now, and I had forgotten that story until recently, what I realize now is keeping that sacred vessel that's now empty that she possessed from something else walking in, because she had called them hungry ghosts at one time. And they're desperate. They're hungry. Mm-hmm. They'll take anything. Okay, it's a vegetable. Well, let me scoot on into this suit and see if I can get something to work.
Right.
Right? And even if they can't get anything to work, if they get that heart monitor to bloop, or if they get that breathing and they start breathing on their own, it's enough of a delay for my mom, from a scientific standpoint. Oh, wait, she really is alive.
Right.
Let's delay this process even further. No, she's dead. I know she's dead. She's standing over here.
You know? So if they can get that delay, does that give them time to become stronger, or can
I don't know that necessarily gives them time to be stronger, but it gives them time to experience earth desires. So someone's touching them now.
Gotcha.
Hey, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I got a feeding tube, but you know what? It kind of tastes like vanilla. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I can breathe. It's that desire to feel the earthly type things that you would not feel in the spirit realm. And it's just desperation because they're wandering around. They don't want to evolve and go up and do other things. They want to, I want to come back to my life. I want to figure out a way to mm-hmm. get in this body so I can go get a beer,
mm-hmm.
you know? And unfortunately it's at the cost of the body on the table that's been almost declared clinically dead.
Right.
Not quite yet, but in the process of dying, I don't want something screwing that up.
Agreed.
So that's what the protection is for. My mom said in their tradition, they do 3 days. I don't know that 3 days is a standard per se, but it's enough to, for me, today she is doing an organ donor. She's donating her liver. I'm still got the demons there. I'm still running the protection there until the moment that she ends up at the funeral home and that she gets cremated. So I will continue to protect her body until then. And that'll be way more than 3 days. You know, it'll be... Yeah, way more.
Wow.
But the bulk of the story is no matter what level you are, you know, you can always say, well, I'm theta level one or Reiki level two or whatever. It's all energy. And everyone has the sacred right to protect the ones they love. They do, especially when the one you love is incapacitated. But you also have to remember that there's a time to not interfere, where you have to let modern medicine do its work. And there's a time to not interfere when you have to let your loved one make their decisions. Because your loved one knows how you feel, but you gotta give them that freedom to decide for themselves what they really want in their life.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. So if you are trying to help a loved one mm-hmm. and they're not incapacitated, say,
mm-hmm.
but you feel like I know what's best for you and you are hitting, you know, the sauce real hard and your life is going off course. We have a lot of interference right now.
Sorry.
No. It's all right. I don't know what's going on. We have a lot of interference.
I'm sorry.
So is that one of the times when you can say like, hey, my brother is, you know, on the wrong path. My sister is on the wrong path. My son, my daughter, my whatever. Because that person is not incapacitated, they're making some really bad choices, going down the wrong road. Or is that the time when you have to know you step back? That is not your karmic place to go in and do something. This is part of their journey and they need to learn some lessons and evolve on mm-hmm. their own, no matter what comes.
Absolutely. Because they have a voice and they can tell you, and as hard as it is, you do need to back off. Now, what you can do is you can just send them unconditional love, because that might soften the blow a little bit for both of you, mm-hmm. you know, but they're put on the planet for a reason, to learn a lesson or to follow a path or to evolve. I mean, I look at Earth as school. You know, we're in school. Some of us do our homework pretty good. Some of us, no, not right. so much. Some of us back off. You know, but that's our choice to do that. And as painful as it is to watch someone who may not be following what our desires are, it's still their life. And they have to. You have to allow someone to live their life. And there's nothing more loving than to do that. Now, if they're, you know, things like addiction and things like that, all you can do is say, here are some counselors I really like, would like you to go to.
Right.
You know, you need to go here or something like that, and try to figure out a way to compassionately tell them that, so that they might be interested. But if they tell you no, you have to respect the boundaries. Right. That's part of that. Because you can take them, you can cuff them, kick them, screaming into rehab, and rehab will make them do things. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they step out, they're right back where they started.
Right.
You know, because that's not what they wanted to do.
Right.
So a person's got to want it. And if they're still capable of telling you what they want, you let them.
Yeah. So big lesson. As hard as it is, you guys, you cannot interfere all the time. You got to let it be what it's going to be. Sophie, yeah. I could talk to you forever and ever. I hope we get to do more episodes together, because I mean...
I hate that I had to do this episode.
As do I. And I'm you know, so...
But at the same time, I felt like it was really important to do this one.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I know when you and I started talking about everything that happened, and I saw it, and I'm like, I get that, because I know I've been there. I know, unfortunately, so many other people have been there too. Mm-hmm. And so many people, including ourselves, will go through it again. Mm-hmm. You know, some for the first time, and it sucks. It mega sucks. There's no way to soften that blow.
And it's, what's worse is feeling helpless.
Yeah.
But with this, you want that'll help kind of subside that feeling, because you right. are doing something.
You are. And I think if there's nothing else that you do, make sure you protect. I love how you said, bring in that white ball, let it explode in the room, and quickly throw up a bubble or a little room, a fort, something over you and your loved one, and clear that baby out and call on light beings, dark beings, like whatever it is that resonates for you. Mm-hmm. Call on them. That is not the time to start throwing spells around to get your way. Guys, remember what Sophie said. Please be responsible.
Yes, please be responsible.
Please be responsible. But I'm so honored to have you on the show, to get to talk to you. I talk about you all the time, and it is always my teacher. Like, I am so crazy about you. And, you know, if you've never seen me hiding in your bushes, now you'll look.
Cause it's okay.
Cause I'm kind of obsessed. But I am so incredibly sorry that you are experiencing this, that you lost your mom. I know, like, I met her several times. Mm-hmm. She was so incredible, is so incredible. And wherever she is, I know they're so much better now that they have her. So
yeah, she's doing some work over there. You know, I know she's doing some work over there. So
yeah, for sure. So Sophie, thank you so much. If you guys have any questions, make sure that you reach out, let us know. And I likely am not going to have the answers, so I'm going to go to Sophie.
That's okay.
And get it it's from fine. Her. Sophie, is there anywhere that you would like people to be able to reach you?
Right now, there, you know, it's just on the My Lands Gifts Facebook page. I took this year off because of all the action happening this year. But next year, I do start back teaching. So I posted on the My Lands Gifts Facebook page. I also posted on my personal page, which is Sophie BM. And my website is www.ahmylan.com, amylan.com. So then you can kind of read up on me there. But yeah, that's about it. That's, you know, I don't post a lot. You know, I stay low key. I'm really an introvert. And this was really hard for me to do this.
Now, when you said you were ready, I was like, oh God, okay, yeah, I will be there. So I will make sure that I link all of your contact information so that everyone can find you, because you really are so magnificent. And whenever you decide to teach again, however long it takes you, whatever it is, like, I know it'll be worth the wait. So yeah. With that, I know you have to go. We're going to let you go, but we will definitely see you again on the show.
Sounds
and
good.
We will talk about whatever you want. We will eat whatever you want. We will, and maybe not hear country music. I don't know.
All right. That's pretty funny.
Thank you so much, Sophie.
All right.
Friends, that concludes part two with Sophie the Great. We hope you enjoyed this enlightening content as much as we did. Thank you again for joining us for another Can't Miss episode and tuning in week after week. We love you guys so, so much. Don't forget to hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, and on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, where I show you guys even more love. And make sure you turn on those notifications and be sure to tag me in your Media Matters post for a very special shout out. Want to shop with me? Find my store at amazon.com/shop/Media Matters and do what I do, shop. Feeling spooky? Send your real life ghost stories to themediamatters@gmail.com via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or leave your ghost story on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118. Do you want the VIP treatment all the live long day? Join our kick-ass Patreon family and be part of the fun. Find us at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today. Are you liking the show? Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review this and other podcasts you're loving. Your ratings and reviews help support the show and makes it easier for others to find your faves. Want a reading from our kick-ass friend Shay? DM Shay on the old Instagram at The Ornery Oracle, mention this specific episode, and receive $10 off your very own reading from our very own Oracle, the one and only Shay. Make sure you check her out on Instagram, The Ornery Oracle. I'll make sure I link it in the show notes for you. With that, you guys, it is a wrap. We're back next week with an all-new episode of The Media Matters. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, may your days be supernatural and extraordinary. Good night, you guys.